You have labor questions? They have answers. Labor Press.
Welcome back to Labor Press's Blue Collar Buzz here on AM 970. Jim Conegliaro Jr. of the Independent Drivers Guild. We're going to talk about how the app-based drivers are doing in the city, and maybe talk a little bit about the gig economy.
Sure.
Jim, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. So, well, the app-based economy is growing faster than I think anybody thought. When we first started this Black Car campaign, there were 10,000 Black Car drivers in New York City. And then after Uber, we saw somewhere at about 15 to 20,000. And I sit here today, we have 64,000 Uber drivers in New York City.
Right.
It's just New York City alone. So that's 64,000 families that are trying to put food on that table through a platform in New York City. And that's just Uber, 64,000 Uber drivers. The entire industry is probably closer to 80,000, 75,000, 80,000. So these are families that are out there trying to make a living. And largely, you know, although New York City has one of the more regulated for-hire vehicle industries, this is an industry where, for the most part, there's a couple of companies that have control of the entire industry and dictate the terms on how workers make a living, how much money they bring home, and how many hours they work. So it's a real issue. You know, the gig economy in general is mostly driven by these ride-hail companies. But, you know, you look a little outside of that, you know, the numbers I've seen within 5 years, you're going to have somewhere about 200,000 workers in New York getting work from platforms, whether that's cleaning houses or doing plumbing or painting or picking up somebody's groceries. And so this is really an issue I think we all need to focus on. And try to find ways where we can either collaborate or push legislation that really is able to protect these workers in an unregulated industry.
Things are happening so fast. They're evolving. You mentioned Uber, Lyft. Originally, Uber wasn't allowing tipping.
Sure.
Now they have tipping.
Yeah.
Like you said, the gig economy's branching out to other kind of, you know, traditional workplaces and jobs. Talk a little bit more about how you try to keep up with all that and try to represent people and try to give, you know, workers a voice when everything is changing so quickly.
Yeah, it's difficult, first off, right? Because, you know, the future of work or the future of the American worker, I don't think has been this unclear in a time in our history, whether it's automation in general with our machine shops or self-driving cars or app companies where people work for two or three different companies at a time. And so it's difficult. You know, they're independent contractors currently classified. The problem with that is I don't know if we're going to see a change in that classification with the current administration and the way the Supreme Court is now set up. So what do we do? And it's an important question. And in no way do we ever say that the Independent Drivers Guild is the ultimate answer or the ultimate way to go. But I think the important thing is that we have to really collaborate and really try to find innovative ways to help workers in situations that might not be somewhere where labor unions have traditionally gone. Right? So you form organizations somehow and form relationships with workers to try to bring those workers' lives, be able to put food on their tables.
What always amazes me is, like, whenever we hear about how things are changing so quickly and the gig economy, and the needs of the workers, that doesn't change. Mm-hmm. You still need to be able to put a roof over your head. You need to be able to put food on your table.
Right. Yeah.
And you need to have health care.
Right.
Take care of your family.
That's right.
And none of these gig jobs that people are using piecemeal together seem to be able to do that.
Yeah, that's right. And I think there hasn't been enough of a conversation on how we fix that particular problem other than to, you know, force all these workers to become employees. And that's definitely one way that we should that should be explored, and to see, you know, if somebody's cheating the system and workers are really employees and not independent contractors, then we have to represent those workers and get them the rights they deserve. But if they're not, then I think we should start thinking about ways and pushing that conversation. Is how do we maintain some of the good parts of a job that may be flexible and allows people to work when they want and work for as many people as they want while providing them with the traditional safety nets that an employee always had. So benefits, unemployment, workers' compensation. And we have to have more of those conversations. It's not going to be an answer from one or two people or even me. I think it's got to be a collaborative effort amongst labor leaders, and we have the best in New York City, to figure out what we can do for workers here and try to provide those benefits and provide the ability to get benefits.
Well, your group itself, it came in amongst, a ton of controversy.
Sure.
A lot of people saying this is not the way to go.
Right.
We need to get these people classified.
Right.
You argued. We tried that for
sure.
I don't know how many years with the black car industry. Talk about the group now, and how do you assess where you are, or where you want to be?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're proud of most is the ability to bring together workers and try to create and give workers who are in this industry in particular come from many different countries and are part of generations that might not know what a labor union is or what a labor union does, and just educating them and showing them that, look, if drivers get together, if workers get together, you can really push legislation and do great things for yourselves. It's just a matter of showing them and teaching them how to organize and come together and push for legislation changes or regulation changes in order for them to provide for their families a little bit better. And so that's one of the things I think we're most proud of with the organization, is that we're able to bring drivers together and show them that you can really have change and really make change.
Looking a little further out, but not too much further out, when you have Google, testing driverless cars, yeah, and that kind of stuff. I mean, how do you wrap your head around that, and how do you try to prepare for that?
Yeah, it's scary. I mean, it's scary for the drivers we speak to. The drivers are in their cars and, making a company profitable that really their end goal is to get them out of the car. And so that's a tough position to be in. And again, not enough conversation around the fact that Uber and Lyft and these companies that are testing driverless cars are going to be able to do that based on the data and the driving record and the trip records of what drivers are doing right now. And so they should share in that. And we need to push for some kind of shared interest, whether it's ownership in the companies, which other companies have tried, or some kind of way where the drivers themselves can benefit from their work and the data that they've collected for the company. And I just think we need to keep continuing to push that conversation, as well as obviously fighting and maintaining as many jobs as we can for as long as we can.
I mean, a few people that I've spoken to about this issue have said that, listen, don't look for the consumer to try to, like, stand up for workers. They're just going to look for the cheapest price.
Right.
And if, like, an automated car is going to do that, they'll do that.
Right.
What do we do when the jobs start disappearing? I mean, do we move to a basic minimum income, or do we try to stave off the robots?
Yeah. Well, look, I think first, if we wait to that point, we've already lost. So I think the conversation has to happen now. I think it's coming faster than we think. I think within 10 years, we'll start to see driverless cars more on the road. It's already happening in Pittsburgh. But I think we need to start that conversation right now. We need to figure out where drivers will be and what the consequences are for that. And then when it comes, the universal basic income is something that's been thrown around. What kind of jobs will be available in that type of market? And are we training the workers that are being replaced to fill those jobs? That's something else that could be part of the conversation. So there's a lot of things we could talk about, but I think the main thing is if we wait to that point where we're actually losing jobs, we've lost a lot of the battle.
And just getting back to your guys, the drivers right now, the fight of classifying them, mm-hmm, is ongoing.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit more about that, where that's at.
Well, it's in the courts, and it's been held up for years. And as we thought, companies with a lot of money will continue to stall and find different ways to file lawsuits and stall lawsuits. And unfortunately, that's where we're at. And I don't know how far we are away from a solution. And you know what? There's talks of a settlement, which may be the worst situation for everybody. Because that's just more waiting and more of an uncertainty for drivers on where they actually fall. So it's in the courts. And you know what? The courts have changed since we even started this organization. So, I don't know if we can really hope for a great outcome if it does reach the Supreme Court.
So in the last minute that we have, talk about personal goals, you know, for you and for the guild and what you guys feel that you can accomplish?
Sure. Drivers? So I'll talk about New York City. I mean, in New York City, like I said, there are now 65,000 families trying to put food on tables through one company. And I think we need to focus on making sure those workers can make a living wage. And so whether that's through regulated pay, whether that's for stopping the onboarding of vehicles so that they can prosper, and as the demand grows, they can also make enough money. But there's got to be enough reporting and enough of investigation how much these drivers make. And we need to push that conversation at the Taxi and Limousine Commission and push for real regulatory change of earnings for drivers.
Thanks a lot, Jim. I think we're going to leave it there. We've been speaking to Jim Canigliaro Jr. with the Independent Drivers Guild, and you're listening to Labor Press's Blue Collar Buzz here on AM 970. We'll be back right after these messages.
You're listening to Labor Press on AM 970, The Answer.